Hello again, everyone. I'm Brian Deanovellis. The calendar turns to March, and for my money, one of the best months of the year to watch sports. Think about it. College basketball tournaments, NCAA tournament, spring training baseball. You've got NBA, NHL seasons winding down, and then the start of the baseball season. Spring training in the middle of the month. Regular season starts at the end of the month. World Baseball Classic. It is a great month of the year to watch sports. Maybe the only month that's better, maybe October, because then you've got the NFL. Then you've got the World Series, right? Playoffs, including NHL, including NBA. So a little bit for everyone this month. There's no college basketball like this time of the year. March Madness is upon us. And what a wild roller coaster week it was for St. John's. One night they get humiliated, steamrolled by UConn, embarrassed. Rick Pitino didn't even go to the post-game press conference because he said, after losses like that, sometimes you regret saying the things that you say. Whatever your take is on that, they came back and they laid a whooping, the mentor smacking the ass of the apprentice, Kevin Willard, and showing St. John's can bounce back from adversity. That was more like the real St. John's team. We'll get into the Johnnies. We'll get into Zubi Ejiofor, who notched his first career triple-double, and they will honor him along with the other seniors on senior night. But really, that senior night is going to be all about Zubi Ejiofor. We'll get into that. Plus, another senior who had his own senior night and would not be denied a victory, Alex Caraban. They raised his number and his name into the Ring of Husky honors, and then he showed why. He is the ultimate UConn Husky, the ultimate winner, the winningest player in UConn history by winning and willing his team to the end line on senior night. UConn would have surely lost to Seton Hall if not for Alex Caraban. We will get into that. Plus Rutgers. Rutgers still has a season. Rutgers still has some pride. Steve Peichel has this team playing hard. In spite of all of their deficiencies, they had a big lead, lost it, but pulled it out in the end, and good for them. Rutgers is not laying over and playing dead. Rutgers still has some fight left. As long as there are games, this team will play hard. And the MAC basketball tournament tips off this week in Atlantic City. Always wide open, always wacky, but one team is the team to beat. That is Merrimack. We'll see how that goes. I'll talk about the tournament and more. Plus, we will turn to D3 Hoops. We will turn to Stevens. The Ducks, quack, quack. They are in the NCAA Division III tournament. I will talk to their head coach, Bobby Hurley. No relation. Another Bobby Hurley. Lives in New Jersey, yes. And he is the head coach of the Division III MAC Freedom Champion Stevens Ducks. We will talk to him and do all of that right after a word from our sponsor, Mike Supa of RE/MAX Revolution. If you're looking to buy or sell a home down the Jersey Shore in Monmouth or Ocean Counties, get in touch with Mike, RE/MAX Revolution. Give him a call, 201-988-2577, and always tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. All right, I'd like to welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast for the first time the head coach of the Stevens Ducks, the head coach of the 2026 MAC Freedom Champions, Bobby Hurley. Coach, welcome. Thanks for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me.
So I just want to get this right out. You know, how many times do you get confused for that other Bobby Hurley?
When I was younger, it was a lot more. Obviously now, since that Bobby's been coaching, probably the last, 10, 12 years, not as much, but prior to that, when he was, kind of away from the spotlight, quite a few times.
And no relation, right?
None at all.
None at all. Okay. Well, listen, you have carved quite a career, coach, and I want to talk about, winning this championship and getting back to the NCAA tournament. What did it mean for you to win another championship, your fourth MAC Freedom Championship, and coming out as the two seed?
Yeah, it's always a great experience for the student athletes to win a conference championship. It's very difficult. We've been fortunate to win four in the MAC. And last year we fell 1 point shy in the championship game. So, kind of having that motivation for this group really helped. And again, we were lucky. We've had guys that have played in conference championship games. So, having that experience with this group, I think really helped us, in the semis and then in the championship game.
And you played a team, Misericordia, who had upset Arcadia in a crazy game. I mean, if you haven't seen that shot, right? I believe Arcadia hit a shot with like 0.6 seconds left, and somehow Misericordia got the ball to midcourt, and in 0.6 seconds, they won the game. So a little surprise in the finals, but a team, no doubt, coach, that they had beaten you back at their place early in the year, 72-49. You beat them at their place, at your place. So, how did you approach that game, and talk to your team, knowing, what had happened and how difficult a challenge it was against Misericordia?
Yeah, we've had over the years some great battles with Miz. They're a terrific team, well coached. But I think we've gotten better throughout the year. So we were able to look back at that game and okay, what areas did we improve upon? Our defense got better. We kind of switched some rotation stuff around and put guys in different places that I think just helped us, down the stretch with, again, just the right pieces playing together. And then we were able to kind of play much better as the season went on.
Tommy Scholl named MAC Freedom MVP after scoring 21 points. The junior, he averaged 21 points. The junior just, is a star in your team. I know you have a lot of good players, but how about the performance he had in the tournament?
Yeah, he shows up for big games. He did it 2 years ago on the championship game, as a freshman. So he's ready to play every game. So his toughness, his just compete level is really terrific. And happy for him to have again this success, especially in conference championship games.
Yeah, from my neck of the woods in Connecticut, went to Fairfield Prep. So shout out to Fairfield Prep. You've got quite a roster, some leaning on your graduate students and Tommy is a junior, but how about the upperclassmen, the experience that this team has, and like you said, getting to that championship game, losing and having that mindset and experience.
Yeah, we have a good group of upperclassmen. Matt Lemming, who's starting for us right now because of an injury with our other graduating senior. He's been terrific and he's played in a ton of games, from freshman year on, makes big shots for us. Two of our grad transfers that come off the bench for us have given us just great energy and effort, especially on the defensive end. Evan Gutowski, another Connecticut guy, just really gives us that presence inside. And we just don't have a lot of depth, up front, but he gives us so much off the bench. And, we're excited about, these older guys getting this experience that they didn't get at other places.
Look, there's no substitute for experience and wisdom, and guys who have been around, no matter what level they've played at, no matter where they've played at, and when you have 22, 23-year-olds, right, against 18-year-olds, in a lot of cases, that you have an advantage there, right?
Yeah, I mean, again, just the physical aspects of it. I think they're just bigger, stronger, faster, and the experience of the amount of practices these guys have been in over their 4 or 5 years. Yes, they've dealt with injuries and that stuff and dealt with some adversity in that way, but all still battled and again they're excited to give us that extra effort and energy that we've needed from our older guys.
So you are the top scoring team in the MAC Freedom, number one 3-point shooting team. So you guys like to get up and down and put them up a little bit, huh?
Yes, we'd like to play fast. We want to space the floor. We have some pretty good shooters, so we want to, let it fly. And if we're playing it with good pace and getting good looks, we have the ability to score a lot of points. With that, we've got to get stops, and you got to be able to go in transition. When you struggle defensively, it's tough to play at the pace we want to play at. So, hopefully, again, our defense has really improved over the last, probably 6 to 8 weeks. And really, that's kind of what we've leaned on, is being able to get stops and go in transition, because then the game's just so much easier, for our offense.
No doubt. And what I always look at, I always, I start on the defensive end and look at the offense. If you're a championship level team, you better be able to play defense. You better be able to get stops. But more often than not, you're in the top of those categories. But then I look at, turnovers, assist to turnover ratio. You guys take care of the ball. You are the best in the MAC Freedom at that. How happy are you with the way you guys have been at the top in that category?
Yes, no, it's terrific. And when you look at the stat sheet at the end of the game, you're always looking to see that assist turnover mark. And we have guys that share the ball. Luckily, our spacing, when it's pretty good, the ball moves around the floor. We have some skilled guys. Even our big guys are pretty good passers. So that ability, again, it makes us a little more dangerous when you're not sure who's going to get the shot on every possession. And again, that spacing and that, unselfishness really helps us a lot.
You are the winningest coach in program history. You won your 300th game earlier this year on February 21st. What did that mean to you, 300?
Well, first of all, it makes you sound old. I mean, I've been around for quite a while. But it's just a testament to the student athletes that we've coached. We get great kids at Stevens, that really hard workers. It's just the type of school we are. And probably the coaching staff that I've been able to work with in, the 18 years. We have great assistant coaches that, really just put their heart and soul, into our program. So, it's kind of all of those things wrapped in one.
We didn't congratulations on that. That listen, you've been around a long time, but that also means that you've won. You've won more than you've lost, and that's a testament. And also there are some assistant coaches. You've got a little bit of a coaching tree too, coach. And a guy like Dave Klatsky was your former assistant. Now that's near and dear to my heart because he's a Holmdel guy.
Yes.
I used to teach at Holmdel High School, not when he was there, but then he went on to NYU and now he's at Florida as an assistant. He's been on the podcast. Waleed Fareed, who I think I pronounced it right, who's the head coach at NYU, who oversaw him. So you've got some guys out there that tutored under you and are now having success elsewhere. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, they're all great guys, great coaches. And it's funny, as much as you say that, like, they've actually made me better coach. They all have great basketball knowledge, and luckily we still share all that knowledge. But yeah, I've been really lucky to be surrounded by just great people.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a testament to you and surrounding yourself with good people. And when you're in the huddle, when you're with guys like that, did you ever kind of like take a back seat? Are you one of those coaches who control the huddle, or do you let your assistants, kind of take over in certain situations?
No, our assistants do a lot. That's kind of how we've always run our program. And it was probably because I was pretty young as a head coach, so I've always leaned on others. That's kind of how we've, run our program from, the last 20 years. So yeah, my assistants are very active, very involved. But again, I've been lucky. We've had great assistants that, again, know their stuff, are great with our guys. So it's really, I want to empower them. And again, I think it helps our program.
What kind of student athletes are you getting at Stevens? I'm assuming, a bunch of them are very analytical, right? They probably know their angles and engineers.
Yes, they're very smart. They sometimes overthink things. We try to keep it simplified, but just how their brain works. But really, we get great kids that are hard workers, and that's the curriculum at Stevens. It's not an easy place academically, so we attract those kids that want the challenge, in the classroom, and it kind of spills over to the court, where they like to be pushed, pretty hard.
Awesome. Well, listen, they've pushed you to another NCAA tournament. You said four MAC Freedom Championships, but since you've been to Stevens, I think this is your fifth NCAA tournament appearance.
Yes, and one as an assistant, so six overall. So,
Six overall. So what is your message, right? You're in the NCAA tournament road trip, Christopher Newport, and that's not an easy trip, but how do you get ready for that game on Saturday at 5:45 or Friday at 5:45 p.m.? Is
yeah,
it
we're
Friday
just
or
gonna have,
Saturday?
you know, a Friday night, 5:45. Yes,
Okay, thank you.
we're practicing tonight. Wednesday, we'll travel after practice Wednesday and practice down there Thursday. And you know, this tournament kind of gives you a little break, you know, because of our conference tournament being every Wednesday, Saturday. So you don't have, you know, 2, 3 days you can string together practices in conference play. So that kind of helps us, you know, to get a little healthier this week. But we're excited. Again, it's the NCAA tournament. You know, teams know each other, but not as well as your conference opponents. So, you know, just depends on the matchup. And you know, we're excited to play. And we're going to go give it our best. And you know, I think it'll be a good fun game for us.
I'm sure you looked at Christopher Newport. How? Give us a scouting report on them.
Very athletic, very physical. John Krikorian, a great coach. You know, they won the championship in 2023, I believe. So it'll be a battle, but we're really excited about it.
You got to the second round in 2022, so just a few
Correct.
years ago. What is it? What's the difference in the NCAA tournament compared to, a conference tournament, or is there no difference?
Well, there's a different feeling. You know, you can tell it's the NCAA tournament. There's that juice in the building, that excitement. But again, it's not knowing your matchup in and out, you know. And I think if you can get off to a hot start, and we did that in 2022, you know, anything can happen. Again, it's March Madness, and you know, at any level, you know, it's a game. So that's what makes it a lot of fun.
If you have a key, right? Couple of keys that you're going to focus on. What are you telling your team about things that you really want to see them do well as they approach this game?
Yeah, I think rebounding is going to be a big issue for us. It's kind of been, you know, an issue for us all season. You know, we graduated Jack Spellman, you know, last season, who, you know, was a double-double machine for us on the defensive end. So now we've had to kind of pick up that slack. So I think rebounding and is going to be probably the number one issue for us if we can keep them off the glass, you know, to give us a really good chance, you know, to win this game.
I believe rebounding, both sides, right? Keeping them off the offensive glass and you hitting the offensive glass, second chance points. I'm always that's another stat I always look to. Do you practice a lot of rebounding? Do you do a lot of rebounding drills in this day and age?
We try, probably not as many as we did, you know, 15, 20 years ago. You know, we try as much as possible. And you know, it's one of those, like with practice, you don't want guys to get hurt. So it's a tough area to really practice. But it's really just, you know, that, you know, reminder on every possession to get a body. And I think we've throughout this season, we've been hurt in a few games. So I think there's a constant reminder to our guys that, you know, we need to box out.
Yeah, it's a different age, right? It's a different era, wide open, four or five spread out, and the 3-point line. If you're not shooting threes in this day and age, then you're not playing the level, the type of basketball that's out there, huh?
Yeah, you know, we're small right now. We'll play four guards and one big guy and space the floor. And you know, that helps us on the offensive end, but you know, conversely, it kind of hurts us on the defensive end because we're not as big to box out. So yeah, you're just trying to win all those little battles, and you know, rebounding is one of those battles for us this year.
All right, Coach. It's been a joy talking with you and hearing, about your success this season, and congrats on the season. Congrats on another championship, another banner, and go get them. Good luck in the
Thank you so
tournament
much. I
because
appreciate you having me.
all right, anything can happen there, Coach, and
Yes.
hope to talk to you soon. Take care.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right. What a pleasure it was to talk to Bobby Hurley. Good luck against Christopher Newport. Hey, you never know. Shock the world. Stevens deserves to be there. It's a long trip down to Virginia. That is a 6-7 hour trip, depending on, which way you go and how many stops you have and how much traffic there is. But they're in the tournament. They have a fighting chance. And Hey, if things shake out, who knows? It's a long shot, but Stevens and TCNJ, two New Jersey teams in the lower part of the bracket, could meet in the Sweet 16. Stranger things have happened. Neither team is favored to get there, but how cool would that be? Two New Jersey teams in the bottom half of the D3 bracket in the Sweet 16, and one of them would go to the Elite Eight. Hey, you can dream, right? So good luck to Stevens. Good luck to TCNJ. Good luck to Montclair State as they take on and tip off the NCAA tournament this weekend around the Northeast. All right, let's go around the tri-state now. And we're going to begin with UConn. UConn and Seton Hall. Look, if you follow me, I bleed blue. I'm from Connecticut and I root for UConn, but when they play Seton Hall, I root for the Pirates. That's the fan in me. All right. And this game, I said it on the podcast. Maybe you could have made some money off this. I said it last week that it felt like a trap game for UConn. And I was right. I'm not right all the time. I like to think I am, but I was right on this one. And in that UConn was coming off such a high, beating their what is considered now their arch nemesis, right? In St. John's, their rival, even though Dan Hurley doesn't want to believe it. They're coming off that emotional game. Alex Caravan honored on senior night before the game. They throw him into the Ring of Honor, the Huskies Ring of Honor there, and becomes the only active player to have his name up there among all the greats. This is the first time that UConn had ever honored such a player while he was still playing. So the tears were flowing. I mean, what an emotional start to this game. And look, a lot of times on these senior nights, coaches hate it because the team comes out flat after all of that emotion. How many times do you see it? I don't care if it's, hockey or basketball. You go through the emotions of this, honor before the game, and then you have to play a game and get your emotions in check. Well, Alex Caravan had his emotions in check, and the rest of the team did not. And they were ripe because Seton Hall had a week off. They had fresh legs. They were coming off their worst 3-point shooting night in 15, 16 years. They were 0 for 18. There is no way that Dan Hurley or UConn or anyone thought that Seton Hall would hit 9 threes in this game. And in many ways, Seton Hall played what I thought was one of their best, if not the best games of the season, considering the opponent. They did everything perfectly for 39 minutes. And then UConn, the heart of a champion. Good teams, great teams find a way to win when they're not at their best. And UConn made the plays down the stretch. Seton Hall did not. Now, I'm not going to get into the refs. I got into it on Twitter. I'll say a little bit about it. When the calls are that one-sided, all right, and you can't argue with other fans on Twitter about their team because they're going to see the officials one way, right? Oh, Seton Hall clutches and grabs, and all they do is foul every possession. They should have got whistled for more calls. You know what? It's the same thing about calling holding penalties in the NFL. All right, Seton Hall is very physical. There's no doubt about it, but you cannot tell me that UConn isn't very physical. And when you have two physical teams like this, and one of them is, not named Creighton, who it's still beyond me how that team never gets whistled for fouls year in and year out. So hats off to Greg McDermott for whatever he's doing over there. But UConn got away with a lot of non-calls. And when it's 22 to 10, when it's the calls are 14 to 4 in the second half, that is as one-sided as you can get. So normally I'm on UConn's side. They are the only blue blood that never gets calls. Well, they got a lot of calls in this game, and you can't tell me any different. So the officials certainly help things. And when the attempted free throws in the second half are 21-2, and they're that lopsided, and 29-9 in terms of attempted free throws, that's a huge advantage. So you cannot tell the story of this game without telling the story of the officials. Okay. Now, look, that certainly helped UConn, but that's not why Seton Hall lost. Okay. The calls helped UConn. The calls went against Seton Hall, but they were still in position to win this game. Why? Because they made threes, because Elijah Fisher had a good game, because Mike Williams hit a clutch three, because AJ Staton McCray had one of his best games of the season. You put all of that together, and Seton Hall was in position. But Bud Clark, who has carried Seton Hall throughout the season, had a very rough game, had an awful second half. I believe in the second half, he was 0 for 4, 0 points, and four turnovers. You cannot have your point guard go through that at any point in a game and expect to win. That is very tough to overcome. Okay, so all of that combined, and the fact that Alex Caravan did not want to lose this game, that tells the story of this game. Seton Hall was up 8 in the second half, and UConn was on the ropes. And then the Huskies went on a 10-0 run, led by Caravan, who hit a three. Braylon Mullins hit a three. They got back into the game. And then down the stretch, they made clutch free throws and iced this game. And fittingly for UConn, they won the game thanks to their captain on senior night, his best game of the season, hit five threes, 23 points. And afterward, Dan Hurley talked about the ultimate Husky winner in Alex Caravan.
We showed the heart of a team, championship level team, 26 win team coming in, now 27. Obviously, it's all about Alex Caravan, his greatness. I just hope the fans at this point now, it's one of the greatest players that's ever worn a uniform for what he's done for the uniform, the amount of winning, the performances, the 40 minutes today.
So the Huskies avoid what would have been really a nail in the coffin type of a loss. They are still alive, fighting with St. John's for that Big East tournament regular season title. But the way the tiebreakers turn out, if both of these teams win their final two games and both UConn and St. John's finish 18-2, which would tie the record, St. John's won 18 games last year, UConn won 18 games the year before. Over the past two seasons, they have been head and shoulders above everyone else in this conference. If they finish tied, St. John's, they share the regular season title, but St. John's would be the number one seed. UConn would be number two. The Huskies are rooting for someone to knock off the Johnnies. Seton Hall hosts St. John's, the last game of the regular season on Friday. Husky fans will be rooting hard for Seton Hall in that one. But I just want to finish by talking about Alex Caravan. This is a guy who, you know me, he is without a doubt one of the top 10 Huskies of all time, top 10 scoring. He is going to be breaking any game now, the all-time record for most three-pointers made by a UConn Husky. Most games played, most starts, most wins. He is up there in so many categories. But one thing, all right, and the people that knock him, and I get this, all right, he was never an All-American. And get this, he has never been on any All-Big East list. He lost the Big East Freshman of the Year to Villanova's Cam Whitmore. That's when I thought Caravan was certainly going to get it. Whitmore played like half a season after being injured and came out of nowhere. And Caravan was like rookie of the week several times, but freshman of the week, I should say. So he didn't win anything his freshman year. His sophomore year, again, he had a very good season, but did not make any of the All Big East teams. His junior year definitely had a down year, didn't deserve it. And now his senior year, he will be on first team All Big East. It is hard to believe a player who has had this great of a career has never made an All Big East team. Not his fault. But that is why some people don't believe, he's Kemba Walker, he's Shabazz Napier, he's Ray Allen, he's Rip Hamilton, he's Emeka Okafor. And I get that. Those players are certainly above him. But if you're looking for that next starting five, in my book, he's in there. He's on that next tier, 6 to 10, somewhere in there. And UConn fans are going to miss him. They're going to miss his winning ways. Enjoy him. Enjoy every last game. If he goes down and leads UConn to a third national championship in his 4 years, then, people talk about winning all the time and winning championships. He's a big reason why UConn won two, and they're a contender. They will be a number one seed. They're a contender to win a fourth. So, Alex Caravan, hats off to you. Seton Hall, they still have a chance. And here's why. That Providence win. Providence is now in the top 75 of net. So that means that win that Seton Hall had over Providence at home goes down. I mean, on the road goes down as a quad one win. So they now have two quad one wins on the season. And if they can beat St. John's and upset the Johnnies on Friday and then win their first round game in the NCAA tournament and beat Xavier at home, right? Beat Xavier at home, beat St. John's, win your first round game and get to the semifinals, I believe they can sneak in as an 11 seed. That is a possibility. And if they play like they did against UConn, where they're hitting some shots, trust me, this team is dangerous. Do they look like some of these other NCAA tournament teams? Do they look like, some of these other bubble teams like Indiana, like TC? Yes, they look like Indiana. Do they look like, TCU or New Mexico or some of these other teams that are on that cusp, the Ohio States? Probably not. Those teams have bigger resumes, better resumes, but you can't tell me, that they don't have as good or a better resume as a team like USC, a team like Auburn, a team like Cal. So you got to win. You have to win. And once again, Seton Hall fans, no matter what the start is, no matter how this team started the year, they have put themselves in position to be on the bubble. And Seton Hall fans have to sweat it out. Right now, I believe they're on the outside looking in. This is the Seton Hall way. Nothing comes easy. And no matter what happens, I will say this. It has been an enjoyable season. It has been a season that no one predicted. They're on the cusp of a 20-win season. There's no way I predicted that. There is no way the most optimistic Seton Hall fan could have predicted that. So in many ways, it is a successful season. But when you get this close and you don't make it, of course there's disappointment. So we'll see. As long as there are games to be played, they have a chance. So gotta beat Xavier and then shock the world against St. John's. We'll see. Speaking of the Johnnies, they had the wake-up call after getting humiliated by UConn earlier in the week, where Zubi and company and Rick Pitino totally got outcoached, outworked, outplayed, out everything. The worst loss that any of those players and coaches had ever experienced, probably, certainly. And they came back. You knew they would fight back. You knew that they would have a much better effort. And you didn't know how they'd perform, but you knew they'd have a much better effort. And after beating Villanova physically and dominating them at their place, St. John's turned it up even more. A 32-point win over Villanova and an absolute beatdown of epic proportions. Zubi Ejiofor played exactly the type of game that the captain shows that he can do. He had a triple-double, the first triple-double of his career, the fifth triple-double in St. John's history. And you don't expect a triple-double from your captain, but what he did was 16 points, 12 rebounds, 10 assists. He also had three blocks. He was a player who was not going to be denied. And when he had his 10th assist and got into the triple-double, the crowd was electric. Since I think they've been categorizing and keeping track of triple doubles, it is the fifth triple double in team history since 1986. He joins Mark Jackson, David Kane, Ron Artest, and last year, Kadari Richmond. First triple double at any level for Ejiofor. And how cool is that? Zubi talked about his performance after the game. He talked about how special it is to return to St. John's. He talked about going through that process in the offseason. I think I read somewhere, I don't know if it was, I want to give the right person credit. I don't know if it was Zach Braziller or Kevin Connolly. I read it on social media where someone said that in the offseason, Zubi Ejiofor's dad told Pitino, "We got offered twice the money that you offered here, but we're staying with you." Twice the money. So maybe that's $2, $3 million upwards of that and more that they were offered and turned it down because he wanted to stay with Rick Pitino. He wanted to do great things here, and he's doing them. And there's more to come. Here's Zubi on his performance and on his remaining at St. John's.
He's meant everything. I felt like I became a man in this program, and Coach Pitino for the last 3 years now has been just guiding me through this whole process. Not just with the game of basketball, but just life in general. Way down the line, and I'm really blessed to be able to put on this jersey. Each and every night, playing in Madison Square Garden, calling that your home court. And just putting on a performance like this, in front of the best fans in the country. And yeah, it means everything to just have this type of performance, especially with my family in the crowd as well.
He's an all-time great. There is no doubt about it. All right. When you go back at the greatest players in St. John's history, right? The glory days of Chris Mullin and Mark Jackson and one of my favorite players of all time, Walter Berry, right? Player of the year, AP player of the year. These guys are at the top, but Zubi Ejiofor rightfully has his place among St. John's greats like Malik Sealy and Bill Wennington and Ron Artest, who we mentioned, Zendon Hamilton, I might even put him above him, right? Spent 3 years here and came in, was a backup to Joel Soriano his first year, and then he just took over. He reshaped his game. He reshaped his body. He was in tremendous shape. And he took his game to another level last year. And he's taken it to that level again this year. He is the captain. He is an all-time great. They may honor him someday and retire his number or put him up amongst maybe not retire his number, but certainly put him up in some type of form in the Hall of Fame. Senior night is coming against Georgetown. There will be other seniors like Ozias Sellers and Joe Sansanin, but it will be Zuby's night without a doubt. And he will receive the loudest ovation. Dylan Mitchell as well. He'll receive the loudest ovation, and rightfully so. Here was Rick Pitino at his press conference talking about what it's been like to have Zuby.
This place was dead. Zuby played behind Joel for 1 year. And he, like Mashburn, helped turn around Kentucky. Zuby helped the turnaround here at St. John's, culture-wise as well as on the court play. Unselfish, just everything about him, never about Zuby, always about St. John's, always about the team, never about self, always about winning, never moody, always disappointed when things don't go well, but willing to fight through it.
So good for Zuby. He's going to get his night, and they should easily take care of Georgetown and then turn the page and try to win the Big East regular season title and get that number one seed with a win at Seton Hall, which, as I said before, will not be easy. I think both teams will have a lot to play for. The first game was close. It's going to be a rock fight. It's going to be a drag them out physical game. And that's going to be something to watch Friday night at the Prudential Center, 9 p.m. I expect a big crowd. I expect a lot of St. John's fans there. That's going to be a cool environment to watch a college basketball game. But one more thing I want to say about their win over Villanova. How about Ian Jackson? What he did, 19 points, 7 of 8 from the free throw line, a career high, 5 steals. He finally showed you, and it's really been few and far between. He finally showed you what he's capable of doing. And the problem with Ian Jackson is he hasn't done it enough. He's had more poor games than he's had great games, a lot more poor games this year. I don't know if he can keep doing it night in and night out, but if he does, that puts St. John's on another level. That puts them, as a team, even as a 6 seed or a 5 seed, can make some noise and get to the Sweet 16 and give a number one or a number two seed a fight for their life. So he's important. We can't forget about him, and we have forgotten about him because he's been invisible. He's been on the bench many games, and he lost, a valuable chunk of time and minutes in this rotation. Dylan Mitchell certainly is the lead guard. Rick Pitino wanted Ian Jackson to be the lead guard, brought him in here saying he was going to be the lead guard. I can turn him into a point guard. That experiment failed, but that doesn't mean you don't have use for Ian Jackson. St. John's can win without Ian Jackson, but they are better with him playing like this. There is no doubt about it. So, something to look out for moving forward is the play of Ian Jackson, how he fits in, and how he can contribute on both ends of the floor. That is key. All right, that is St. John's. I want to talk a little Rutgers and then get to the MAC because Rutgers, you know what? It has been a long, tiring season on the banks. It's been really a long 2 seasons because last year's disappointment was one of the most disappointing seasons, if not the most disappointing seasons in Rutgers history when you have 2 lottery picks, 2 top 5 picks, and you forget about going to the NCAAs. You're under 500, 15 wins. This year, we knew the roster, was just not put together well by Steve Peichel. I get it. He didn't have money, but he still constructed this roster. There were too many freshmen, too many inexperienced players, and a big gaping hole at center. You cannot do that again next year, Steve Peichel. Now, Kelly's in, obviously, has gone out and fundraised. They have corporate sponsors. We've seen and read that Rutgers will have double their NIL, somewhere upwards of, you know, $7 million to play with, if not more, $7, $8 million. A center is their number one priority. We will see Tariq Francis likely return. Darren Buchanan, both of them had big games against Maryland. But Steve Peichel is going after a center. And don't be surprised if he goes hard after Najai Hines at Seton Hall. He's a Linden guy. They recruited him. He's a Jersey guy. So that is going to be fascinating. And also, keep your eye on St. John's. Keep your eye on UConn. Najai Hines is going to have tons, countless suitors. A big man with those hands, with those skills, with that body, with that strength, that raw strength, does not go unnoticed by everyone. So Seton Hall is going to have a hard time keeping him. They're going to have to pay to keep him. That's going to be fascinating. And Rutgers will be there. I have a feeling St. John's will be there. And don't be surprised if Dan Hurley isn't there as well. So why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you if you're their team, those teams? So that's number one for Steve Peichel in the offseason. But for the time being, this team is fighting for a bye in the Big Ten tournament. They are currently tied for 15th place with Northwestern, or 14th place, but they, whatever it is, but they get the bye ahead of Northwestern. They get the tiebreaker because they beat them head-to-head in their only matchup. So if you're rooting for something for Rutgers, win one of your final two games. They're at Michigan State. That is not going to happen, all right? That is not going. Pigs will fly before Rutgers wins at Michigan State. And then they have Penn State at home, a team that is dead last. You have to win that game. Have to. Win that game. They get a bye because this time, for the first time ever, the Big Ten will have all 18 teams competing in the Big Ten tournament. So they won't have to be in that first day of matchups, which is big. You get an extra day of rest. So they almost blew the lead against Maryland. They had a 20-point lead. And as much as they had dominated the first half, they let Maryland back in the game, but they made the plays down the stretch. Tariq Francis was great. Darren Buchanan was very good with 14 points. And good for Rutgers. They won that game. Now go out and win one of your final two games. And that puts you in position to get a bye. All right. And that would put them at 13 and 18. And honestly, that's exactly where I had them in the beginning of the season. That's the record that I had Rutgers having. They won 15 games last year. And I was like, well, you lose two lottery picks, you're going to win a few games, but probably less than you did last year. 13 and 18 is exactly where I had them. So that is as much as this season has been, you know, a major disappointment. You're looking toward next year and you're trying to see who's worth keeping. And I think Buchanan's a keeper. I think Tariq Francis is a keeper, maybe Jamichael Davis. And, you know, Lino Mark, I wouldn't go beyond those four, honestly. If someone wants to stay and, you know, they're worth it, then fine. But I would begin with those four looking ahead to next year. So we'll see if Rutgers can win one of their final two games and you know, have a little positive taste on their mouths, right? Before I get to the MAC, I do want to talk about the Rutgers women. This is a program that is in shambles. Ever since C. Vivian Stringer, we saw her health deteriorate and she took a back seat her last couple of years as the coach. She wasn't really at games. They brought in Coquise Washington, who has been nothing short of, I'm just going to say, a disaster. She got fired last week. Her record at Rutgers, 42 and 84, 11 and 61 in the Big Ten, 11 wins over 4 seasons. That's an average of less than 3 wins a season. They were 1-17 in the Big Ten this year, the worst record ever in any conference, 1-17. This is a program that once went toe to toe with Tennessee and gave UConn and Gino Auriemma a run for his money every time they played. This was the premier sports program at Rutgers, women's basketball. It was must see. They were winning. They were going to the NCAA tournament. They were going to Final Fours. They went toe to toe with Tennessee in the championship game. They were a perennial Sweet 16 team. Once the pride and joy, the crown jewel, is now the worst program in the Big Ten, the worst program at Rutgers. They need to get it right. They cannot, Kelly Zinn cannot mess this up. This is important for athletics. This is important for Rutgers women's basketball. So we'll see what happens there and who they hire. But huge. This is her first hire, first major hire at Rutgers. Kelly Zinn, eyes on that. All right, as we wrap this up, let's talk about the MAC because it is always a wide open tournament, as you know. I love the MAC conference. It is something that is going to be fun. And congratulations to Merrimack for winning the conference regular season title. We had Joe Gallo on earlier this year, Jersey Joe Gallo, and he talks about it. You know, this is his, I believe this is his fourth regular season title in 6 years, three in the Northeast Conference, and his first in the MAC in his second season. That's impressive. This guy wins. And for my money, I know the MAC doesn't often have the number one seed go to the NCAA tournament, but they're the favorite. All right. They are clearly the favorite. They deserve to be the favorite. And they're my pick to win it all. I'm not going out on a limb, and that's okay. I love the way they play defense. I love how connected they are. They can win on the road. They can win at home. They can win neutral sites, which this is in Atlantic City. I love their chances. I'm interested in, you know, St. Peter's has a very good chance. If anyone can, defense travels. You know, Brent Bland, Bryce Eaton, they have a dynamite connectivity and chemistry about themselves. They went on the road and beat a hungry Marist team at their place. St. Peter's swept Marist this season. That is not easy. So Merrimack gets the bye, St. Peter's gets the bye. Those are those two teams. If anyone wins it other than those two teams, I know it's the MAC. But to me, those teams, those are the two teams that have the best chances. They really are. They deserve it. They're playing that great. They have great coaches. They play great defense. They find a way to grind out games. They've beaten every team. So they clearly deserve to be the favorites. The matchups that I like in the first round, I'm loving the 8-9 game between Iona and Sacred Heart, two very talented teams. Two teams that have as much talent as anyone in the conference, but had majorly disappointing seasons. Dan Giroux is still trying to figure out the MAC, okay? They fired Tobin Anderson unceremoniously, kicked him to the curb to bring in their guy. Dan Giroux is a great guy. I love hearing him talk basketball. He knows X's and O's, but it's different. This conference is a beast. And as much talent as they have, it's a hard conference to figure out with so many different styles. And they have certainly struggled away from the Hines. They did beat Sacred Heart handily earlier in the year at Sacred Heart. Obviously, they have a lot of talent on the roster, like I said. the 8-9 matchup, it's really a coin toss. Sacred Heart is kind of healthy. They're banged up. But which Sacred Heart team will show up? The team that shoots and makes threes, or the team that, doesn't play good defense? If you're asking me who has the edge in this game, I think Iona has a slight edge. I would put them as like a 2.5 point favorite, 1.5 point favorite on a neutral court. But this game's going to come down to whichever team has the ball, probably last possession, whichever team outscores the other. I really think that. Okay. They're two high scoring teams. They love to shoot threes. If you like offensive basketball, that's the game to watch in the first round. I like Fairfield over Manhattan. Fairfield had a tough loss. Boy, did they get smacked by Mount St. Mary's at their place. I've been saying if there's one team in this conference that can beat anyone and come out of, a lower seed, it's Fairfield. Well, lo and behold, they laid an egg in their last game, and now they're the 7 seed. I like them as a 6 seed. I don't like them as a 7 seed because should they beat Manhattan, they'll get St. Peter's, and I like St. Peter's in that one. The 4-5 matchup, Quinnipiac at Marist, is going to be a dogfight. Two teams with championship aspirations, great coaches in Tom Pokora and John Dunn. That is a fascinating game as well. Quinnipiac has the talent to hang with Merrimack. I don't think Marist is quite as good. So if you're looking for an upset there to knock off the number one team, I would give Quinnipiac, if they win, the better chance. So, Siena doing very well, but as the 3 seed, again, I like St. Peter's. I'll be a little surprised if it is 1 versus 2 in the championship game, but they are the two best teams. And if you're asking me to pick a team right now to win it all, I'm going with Merrimack. So that is your MAC report. Ladies and gentlemen, conference tournament season, March Madness. It's here. It's beginning this week in the tri-state and all across the country. Enjoy the games, everyone. It's been a lot of fun. My thanks to Bobby Hurley, the other Bobby Hurley at Stevens. Enjoy the games. March Madness. It doesn't get any better. My name is Brian Dean of Ellis. See you next time.